This CoinWeek podcast is brought to you by PCGS. The popular PCGS Coin Price Magazine Rare Coin Market Report is back and free to all PCGS Collectors Club members and authorized dealers. This bi-monthly companion magazine to the PCGS online price guide and mobile app will feature 140 pages of coin pricing information, as well as articles written by respected numismatists.
So, Phil, now that America's being made great again, we can pretty much all sell our gold, right?
Yeah, right. Sure thing.
So, I want to talk to you about precious metals. So after you left your job as the director of the United States Mint, you got into the precious metals area. You sort of have a philosophy behind
yes.
why you're involved in metals, which is maybe not the same as sort of the fever swamp dreams of some of the ways gold
right.
gets sold to people. So
yes.
I want you to first to kind of explain your philosophy so
yes.
people watching this and listening to this can kind of understand where you're coming from, and
right.
then I'll ask you some more questions about
okay.
it.
Okay, good. Really, where I start with this is that there's tremendous mythology that has developed around the gold market and the ownership of gold, and also an ideology around gold. And it's really hard for mainstream buyers who might think about buying gold to work their way through all that mythology and ideology. And as a result, there are a lot of people, the vast majority of people, who should at least be entertaining the idea of gold and understand its basic value proposition, who today are not because of all the controversy and mythology around gold.
So before we get into what you think are your reasons and good reasons why people should be investing or thinking about gold, let's talk about some of the different types of dubious sales pitches that are in the marketplace for why people should buy gold. So
right.
the first one, I think, is based on a model of fear.
Right, that's right. Yes. There is certainly a role for caution and in considering to buy gold. And I make the case that there's a role of pessimism in deciding whether or not you want to own gold and how much. And this gets to the basic value proposition that I see for gold, and it has been the value proposition for thousands of years for gold. And that is, it's a bad news investment. It's a hedge against bad news. I talk about it as being wealth insurance. You buy it like you do life insurance or auto insurance in case things go wrong. And one of the differences between gold and other more traditional forms of insurance is that at the end of, a year, you don't expect your auto insurance to be worth anything. You don't ask, how much is my auto insurance worth? Or you don't say, man, I wasted a year's worth of premiums because I didn't have an accident.
Right.
And gold is different in that it retains at least a portion of its value, and it also provides this insurance. And the record is absolutely clear in the vast majority of cases in which there is major economic dislocation, major recessions, when there are shocks in the financial system, when war breaks out, gold rallies when other investment classes decline. And if you have gold as part of your portfolio, then you offset those losses to a degree. And that's where I say pessimism, and maybe even to the point of fear, has an appropriate role in deciding whether to own gold and how much to own. The more pessimistic you are about the state of the world, it makes sense to own more gold.
So, looking at it through a historical lens, even when gold was circulating money,
mm-hmm.
okay, gold as circulating money tended to be inconvenient. in part for the people carrying the gold, but also in part for the banks.
Right.
So one of the things the banks would do is they would issue paper money that would be backed by deposit in gold, and people would spend this more or less freely. Whether or not they wanted to spend that is another matter, but they did.
Yes.
What would happen is when they lost confidence in the economy or the bank, they would go to the bank and get all of their gold out, a run on the bank.
That's right.
So fear, even when gold was circulating money, still played a factor in people's desire to hold on to that.
Right.
The Civil War breaks out in 1861.
Yes.
People held on tightly to their precious metals money, which meant that the government had to issue paper to substitute for it. So it is important when we think about fear to realize that even when gold was money, there were still situations, economic situations, social situations, where people would hold on to that.
Yes.
That it would be more dear to them to hold on to than to spend.
Yes, that's right. And that's exactly right. And that's why there's an increase in demand as fear runs through markets. And more people want to acquire it and more people want to hold on to it because of that very dynamic that you're talking about.
But let's talk real quick about ways, and you got to pay attention to this if you're a potential buyer, ways at which this fear is exploited or exaggerated in order to sell gold. Because it seems to me that, you know, every time you see somebody, it's hyperinflation this, or it's the Fed doing this, or it's the executive order recalling all of the gold. This sort of thing doesn't really, it sort of exacerbates a real condition, but these aren't necessarily factors that you should take as seriously, I think, is what
Well, we have to talk about a big separation in the market. There is a smaller group of long-term gold buyers and holders who are fearful. And they are fearful about all these factors you're talking about, the confiscation of gold, which is a complete myth, complete misunderstanding of what happened with Roosevelt and what Roosevelt did. To counter the effects of the Great Depression. But there is this group who are very fearful, and like any marketer, you sell to your audience.
Right.
And you make appeals to them. It's no different in the gold business than any other. You take for granted what appeals to your customer. And so there is that appeal dominates much of the market. What my point of view is that, you know, that's fine. You know, the industry is selling to people who are primed for that message. But there's another much larger segment of the marketplace that is put off by that kind of appeal, that fear-based appeal, and who have every bit as much interest in owning gold, but for very different reasons. They are not so driven by fear. They may be driven by some degree of pessimism, but they just, you know, that stuff seems out there to them. And so I feel like the industry really needs to be talking much more to these folks over here who have a lot of money. There's a good reason for them to own gold. And yet they don't. And part of the problem, too, is with the incentives in the financial advisory community.
Right.
If your customer comes in to you and says, I want to put 10% of my portfolio into gold, those financial advisors know the gold is a buy and hold asset. People don't turn that over every year like they do stocks. And, of course, financial advisors make their money, you know, on turning over investments. So you immediately set aside 5, 10, 15, 20% of the portfolio from being moved like that. And also the financial advisors are also put off by the fear-mongering appeal. So they tend to steer those mainstream customers away from gold.
So let's talk about the second aspect, a way that gold is marketed. This is that gold is an investment.
Right.
That's also a little bit nuanced, because gold is not really a traditional investment.
Right. No, it's not a traditional investment. But I mean, it is, it's sort of neither fish nor fowl, or maybe it is both fish and fowl, but it's an insurance policy in hard times, but it's, you don't have very many insurance policies that can actually go up in value, and gold does that. Gold does that not only does it have a proven track record on moving up in value in hard times, but there are also good times when gold has gone up in value. And, you know, the 2000s, the gold market rallied from around 2000 to 2008 during mostly good times. And then it rallied even higher after the 2008 financial crisis. So in that respect, it's appropriate to think of gold as an investment. But the core value proposition of gold is not as an investment. It is as wealth insurance. I think what happened is the whole market got distorted and spoiled by that run, long, decade-long run in gold prices, so that people started thinking of gold as being another investment, just another investment class, and they forgot about what that basic value proposition was. And, you know, marketers, you know, got into the habit of selling gold on the basis of its appreciation potential. While there is an appreciation potential, and that's very important, that is not really the reason why most people should own gold.
Well, as much as there's an appreciation potential, there's also a depreciation potential.
Well, that's right. Well, that's exactly right, but it's no different in any other investment class. There's no other investment class that is immune to declines in value. And I think there's some truth to this, and that is, yes, the value of your stock in Enron or in MCI or WorldCom or Arthur Andersen, it can go to zero. Now, that's unusual, but that does happen. Gold never goes to zero. I mean, a drop of 50% is a dramatic drop in gold prices. And from the time we hit our peak at around $1,900 an ounce in 2011 to today, at the lowest point, it didn't drop 50%, probably dropped around 40, 45%. So in that sense, gold is a more secure investment than virtually any other class. There's, you know, I don't know of another class that over the course of history has never gone to zero.
So let's talk about, again, we're going to get to the investment angle. Mm-hmm. And let's talk about premium.
Sure.
Okay, so you probably deal with a wide range of clients, you know.
Right.
Are the wealthiest clients buying things at significant premiums, numismatic premiums, novelty premiums? I mean,
yes.
What is the shape, the actual shape of the market? So if someone wants to get into the market, and they have no experience yet, but they're trying to learn, how are savvy, experienced buyers buying gold? And what advice would you give to people just coming into the market of what is the right way for them to buy gold that is as insurance,
yes,
as the safest way to buy it, the,
yes,
smartest way to buy it? What should they,
yes,
avoid, and what should they look for?
Yes. Well, if you're new to the market, then you ought to be really focusing on bullion. And you ought to shop around. It's a commodity. And you ought to shop around for the premiums, and you can go online and find the best premiums. That said, you still need to know your dealer, because increasingly we're finding that people are not necessarily getting what they think they're buying, even with bullion. So, and of course, you know, I'm an American, a former director of the United States Mint. I direct people to the Eagle, not only because it's made in America by Americans with American gold, but it's just the right thing to do. And there's no reason, really, to own a different country's gold, unless you can find a substantial difference in premium. And they just, it's very rare where you find that. One thing to know is that the more you buy, the lower the premium you pay. So if you're buying 10th ounce Eagles, then you're going to pay a higher premium than you would with a 1 ounce Eagle. And the same goes with bars. The larger bars you buy, the less the premium. So if you are new to the market, you ought to be really looking, and especially if you're buying for wealth insurance, you got to look at bullion. Now, you also have this whole numismatic market, and that's much more complex, and you have to educate yourself. It's like any other investment. If you just go randomly buy stocks, I mean, you have to be intelligent about which stocks. There's some stock picking to do, or you have a strategy in which you buy from, you know,
like a mutual fund.
A mutual fund that has a specific philosophy that fits what your requirements are. Same thing with numismatic coins. You got to know what you're doing. You got to know the various factors that go into determining the price and the appreciation potential. And really, you need good guidance. And even more than bullion, with numismatics, you need to know and have confidence in your seller.
So Phil, what are some insights that you have on the bullion market that, you know, are unique to your experience as being the director of the Mint and running one of the largest bullion sales operations in the world?
Well, it's hard to come up with sort of unique points of view on bullion. I suppose what's unique about my point of view is that I think there's a much wider range of people who should be considering gold for their portfolios. People who are not as pessimistic or fearful about the state of the world and where we're headed, but people who understand the state of the world and understand that bad things happen to good people and bad things happen to good countries, and recognize that, have a certain degree of pessimism, but a balance between pessimism and hope. But no, you got to hedge against the pessimistic side of things. And over the course, I think a lot of us feel this way, that over the course of certainly the last decade, the country has drifted to a place that very few of us feel comfortable about. We might have different reasons for why we are uncomfortable, but I think a huge proportion of the American people do not feel comfortable about where the country is today. And the degree to which you're pessimistic should appropriately shape how much you think gold should be part of your portfolio. Now, there's a lot of other factors, too, that go into it. Depends on how many assets, what the size of your assets are. Depends on your risk averseness. Depends on, the security of your job. It depends on, where you are in your investment life cycle. If you're getting toward the end of your towards your retirement, the end of your career, that's different from when you're young. So all of those are factors, and it's difficult to weigh those without financial advice. But my recommendation is, if your financial advisor just rules out gold, you ought to push back on that, because they either don't understand the value proposition of gold, and or they're being motivated by financial incentives, because they're going to make less money if you invest in gold than if you don't, because of the turnover.
So I want to ask you sort of a very real unfiltered question. So for many Americans, like, gold's an expensive item. I mean, 1 ounce of gold's over $1,000.
Yes. Okay?
There are a lot of Americans who can't afford that.
Right.
A lot of Americans are in debt. probably more Americans are in debt than are not in debt.
Yes.
So right. I see that people who maybe woke to the possibility that they should have some precious metals or some sort of investing that can't afford gold do go the silver route.
Right.
You know, because, you know, silver is like a cheaper commodity.
Yes.
Is investing in precious metals, investing gold and silver, is that an analog comparison? Or are basically people being sold silver as a substitute for gold for the reasons why you would hold gold, but those reasons don't necessarily translate to silver. Silver is much more abundant.
Yes. Well, over the long term, there's a historical relationship that is pretty consistent over time. It differentiates sometimes, but it tends to go back together. But historically, there's a relationship between the price of silver and the price of gold. And so in that respect, silver is an appropriate substitute for gold if you don't have the means to purchase gold. However, that may not always be the case, because gold is, there's not a large demand, industrial demand for gold. There's jewelry demand for gold, but even that is a relatively small part of the market. Whereas silver is an industrial, has industrial applications. As a result, there are other multiple sources of factors that are driving silver prices that don't apply to gold. So in that case, it's not a very good substitute. And I'll give you an example of this. When the economy goes south, gold tends to go up, whereas silver may, in sympathy with gold, also want to go up. But because such a large portion of silver demand comes from industrial applications, then when industry goes down the tubes in hard times, then that demand disappears and doesn't support gold's price. So that's just sort of one of the examples. Gold, yes, gold is expensive, you know, over $1,000 an ounce. But you don't have to buy 1 ounce. You can buy a 10th ounce. And at something a little over 1/10 of the cost of a full 1 ounce coin. And so you will pay a higher premium with a 10th ounce coin. But I think there are ways for buyers who have of limited means, who believe in the value proposition of gold as wealth insurance, where they can afford it. And so, you know, I think it depends on what your own personal situation is.
Right. Well, I appreciate your insights, Phil. It's always very illuminating to talk to you about these things.
That's great. My pleasure. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Uh-huh.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please share it with your friends. And remember, you can download all 73 episodes of CoinWeek's award-winning podcast for free on the iTunes Store. For CoinWeek, I'm Editor Charles Morgan. Until next time, happy collecting.